Hello, everyone. This is Pastor Deborah, and we are here live on the Blog Talk Radio Show of NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And I am Pastor Deborah, and I'm going to have a topic for us to be listening to, learning from, and that I'm going to be teaching on. And it's called The Curses of Abuse. I want you to learn about some things. You don't usually hear the word curses in mental health counseling. It's more of a spiritual care word. But what I had to learn when I became a minister and a pastor and helping people the spiritual care word was what curses were in our lives and how they traveled through generations. They traveled through words. They traveled through sounds and smells and spiritual ways. And tonight I want to talk about the curses of abuse. And I want to talk about four areas. One, fear. Two, rejection. Three, the loss of innocence. Four, the brokenness of self. And I'm going to get into this a little bit more with our host and any guests that come. So you stay with us here on this live broadcast show or blog talk radio of NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. I am one of their regular professional guest speakers because I too had a childhood of abuse of many different kinds. And I had to overcome and I had to be healed from that life. And I have got some stories, but right now, you come and listen about the curses of abuse, and I'll see you on the live Blog Talk Radio show coming up. Bye-bye.
Here it goes.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Stop Child Abuse Now. SCAN, radio show number 3433. I'm Annie Morgis, and I'm one of your co-hosts tonight. I'm here with Pastor Deborah Schley, and she's going to be our survivor professional host. And we'll do an open mic forum, so I invite you to call in. The phone number to call in is 646-595-2118. And before we begin, I'm going to read you the mission statement. This show is brought to us by NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And here is the mission statement of NASCA. We have a single purpose at NASCA: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, CSA. Presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Okay, and as I mentioned, we have a survivor.
Hello? Yeah, a husband was trying to ask me a question. I'm here. I'm here.
Okay. You know what? I was just about to read your biography from the website, and it's not your biography. It's someone else's. And so I'm going to ask you if you would introduce yourself and tell a little bit about who you are and where you come from and the books you've written and all that.
Okay. I'm currently a global spiritual teacher who had been a licensed mental health counselor in the state of Florida and a nationally clinically certified mental health counselor. Prior to that, I grew up in the military as an officer's daughter, traveled all around, moved about every 2 years, came from a family where there was lots of, we'll call it, emotional abuse, no talking, suicide, mental illness. And then as I got into my teenage and early adult, some sexual abuse on my towards me. And so I went into helping people. And back in the 70s, you really only had school teaching or maybe social work. But my dad was a psychology teacher at a university, Troy State University in Montgomery. So I went that way, but I didn't want to do the PhD because I didn't want to do anything for lab rats. So I stayed at a master's level in counseling. And in the state of Florida, about 1981 maybe, they were starting to grandfather a lot of master's people in so they could get a license and under the quality, the medical quality assurance department, and they could then charge the insurance companies to make money. So we moved into from counseling, sort of what they would call talk therapy, to learning how to diagnose a medical disease, mental health problems, and to treat. Those were the two terms, diagnose and treat. That was acceptable language to the insurance companies. So you had to have certain classes. I actually had to go back to the university, take about 5 courses that were accepted by the state to complete my master's level. I had about 4 years of college, and then about 2 years after that, then 2 years of supervision under a clinical psychologist, and then you had to take a state test, which cost a lot of money, maybe $500. Didn't pass it the first 2 times, had to come back and study. I'd miss it by 1 question or something. Eventually, I got my license, and then you could be more permanently employed either in private practice or in hospitals or in the local community mental health center. Master's level counselors were sort of different than social workers who believed if we change your social environment, school, get you healthier, get you some food, you'll be able to make better decisions, that kind of thing. Some social workers went into clinical social work, and they got medical experience in hospitals with psychiatrists. I was fortunate. I was in a rehabilitation hospital with psychiatrists, physiatrists, social workers, occupational therapy, physical therapy, nurses, writing, you know, doctors. So I had some different experiences and trying to help people through problems. But slowly I kept wanting to pray with people or get the Bible to them and help people. I saw hurting people in churches, everywhere. I volunteered in the community and just about in hospice, help people to die. With child advocacy as a legal eyes and ears of a judge. did other kind of child abuse stuff and volunteered. Worked in the church and, you know, many different areas. And slowly I felt I wanted to help more from a biblical, spiritual way. Like, be able to do prayers with people or something. But that was not accepted at the time. There was no classification because mental health counseling was considered a disease. And you were in the pecking order of a psychologist and psychiatrist. Medical problems. So I slowly was sort of taken out of that, and I thought, oh, I could be a Christian counselor, be on staff at a church, provide mental health counseling to the parishioners, you know, Christian type stuff, and to other churches, and that didn't work out either. So I ended up with no job. The Lord, when I was making these changes, asked me to put my license down, don't renew it. We had to renew it every few years, and we had to have, I don't know, 15 hours of continuing education. He said, don't renew it, so I didn't. Now I have no job, no nothing. And I was always praying for people with very serious abuse problems, beyond just child abuse, sexual abuse, spiritual abuse, religious abuse. Human trafficking, abuse, all kinds of worse than most people. And I didn't know who they were. And God slowly taught me, trained me, had me read books, watch movies. And then he started bringing them to me in a church. And I didn't even know what multiple personalities were. I'd heard about them. I had watched the movie, The Three Faces of Eve, but it didn't really mean anything to me when I watched it originally. But then when I watched it to learn something from it, that was different. And I had to be taught through God, through personal experience in a church, what multiple personalities were. I had to study the occult, all kinds of abuse that I don't want to talk about because it'll hurt people if they hear it. I had to jump into the deep end of darkness. And I kept my mouth shut. And Bill actually found me when I was starting to come on LinkedIn, and I had a profile. I actually took a class to learn about LinkedIn and networking, not to make money, but to help people. And he found me out there and brought me to NASCA. And I've been here, I don't know, it seems like several years ever since doing the radio show. I did some video blogs and wrote some articles and made some videos for NASCA about spiritual care, which is, it's called a lot sort of out in the world instead of Christian counseling. It can be, but it's also called spiritual care. So that's another term that you might hear that's acceptable sort of by psychologists and things. And so I'll leave it there as my introduction. And then Annie, if there's anybody on the line, you can introduce them.
Okay, thank you for that wonderful introduction to yourself. I learned a lot more about you that I didn't know. And we do have someone on the line, and I'll say, hello, who is this, please?
Hi, this is Philip.
I'm sorry?
Philip.
Oh, Philip. Hi, Philip. I didn't hear you the first time. I'm sorry. Welcome. Do you have any comments or questions for Pastor Deborah?
No, ma'am.
Nothing? Okay. Well, maybe later, huh?
Yay.
Okay. All right. I will repeat the numbers of call-in numbers so everybody can call in like Philip did and become part of our panel and ask questions, make comments, and tell your own story. The phone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And I'll be the person who answers the phone and lets you into the radio show. And I'm Annie, so don't be afraid. Okay, back to you, Pastor Deborah. Did you have a a topic that you wanted us to think about tonight.
Oh, sure do. Last week when I was on, we were talking about the curses of abuse to a child. And I want to just list about four of them, and we can kind of work our way through them. One of them is fear. Two is rejection. Three is the loss of innocence. And four is the brokenness of self. These become a curse. And what a curse is, it's not a blessing. It's not something positive in your life that brings about growth, happiness, joy, peace. A curse is, it comes through actions, words. It can come through vows that our ancestors or parents made, or words that they said. We could say if a parent said, I'm going to kill you, you know, like you didn't pick up something. Go do that or I'm going to kill you. Those words become a curse. I'm going to kill you. It can mean physically, but it can mean I'm going to kill who you're supposed to be in the future. I'm going to kill who you are now. I'm going to destroy you. Okay? What I learned in spiritual work, when you have curses spoken, they are containers of bad, evil things. Usually death, a life, not so much physically, but it can be. Curses are, if you understand spiritual work, in voodoo, black magic, through a lot of spiritual things, somebody might want to go to one of them. In voodoo, it works out and might kill a chicken, spread the blood, because we want to kill a neighbor, or we want to maybe curse a family who wouldn't do business with us, or we're angry. You'll hear a lot about that in what a lot of times people would call alternative spiritual religions. Curses have been there forever. They're part of spirituality that humanity has always known about. You would hear about our ancient ancestors saying they were cursed by their ancestors. And a lot of us don't know that. My brother was. Four generations back, a lady in Northern Ireland had a relationship with a Druid high priest, had a child, a firstborn male. She wanted to keep it. The Druid high priest wanted to sacrifice it to his god. She made a deal with the Druid high priest, who made a deal with the god, who happened to be Satan, the god of this world, that if she could keep this male child, they could have, in four generations, her firstborn grandson. Happened to be my brother. From the time that the curse kicked in, he had been baptized into Christ. He had been in church. So they couldn't quite kill him outright, like say with a disease or a sickness or in the womb. But they could destroy him emotionally, and they used my mother, who had issues. They made him a chain smoker. They destroyed the relationship between him and his father, between him and I. So in a way, he died, and the life that he was to have was cursed. He did not fulfill and become the person his parents wanted him to be. We don't know about this. And a lot of times our ancestors, they will pass on their fear. There are things in spirituality that travel the family lines. We know that in genetics. Sometimes you have a genetic disorder, sickle cell anemia, sometimes they're saying cancer. Other things are genetically transferred. Sometimes it can skip, you know, a generation, and the genes show up and here you are having a medical problem. And so they know that, but things travel through genes. Rejection can travel for many generations. The loss of innocence, child abuse, can travel. Oh, you're just like your, you know, uncles do it, and it's done to them, and it was done to them, and it gets done to you. And what happens through these curses is our self, who we're supposed to be, gets all broken up, destroyed. People don't understand that in mental health counseling, you don't normally talk about curses or blessings. And I had to learn that when I started into spiritual work, how to counteract the word curses and the curses in somebody's life by speaking blessings over a person. And counteracting the words will say assignment of the curses. Sometimes they're just word curses. Sometimes we learn when you study. In my brother's case, my brother was sold, given away by an ancestor on my father's side 4 generations back. Okay. The deal was done. Nobody talked about it. Oh, nobody. Okay. And here it comes. I didn't learn that till much later when I really got into helping people from a spiritual side. You don't hear much about curses in mental health counseling. You don't hear much about spiritual work or, like, say, how to counteract if you're under an attack. And I ran into this when I was working volunteering as a pastor in the local mental health center's crisis stabilization unit. When the police would pick you up and you were considered Baker acted or you were acting crazy, they would take you to this unit, and they would try to figure out what's wrong, get you on some medication. And this one young, precious, precious young black man was there. And I was teaching on that we are 3 parts, physical body, a soul, and a spirit. And he was saying that he believed the reason why he was there and he was acting weird was he was under spiritual attack. And I said, what do you mean? He said, my parents worship and practice voodoo. In the black community, that's normal for a lot of people. And he said, I don't want to practice and be involved in voodoo. And therefore, because I don't want to do that, they are attacking me, and I feel like I'm under spiritual attack from voodoo. Now, what would you do if you were a psychiatrist, mental health counselor, and you hear that from your patient? How would you handle that? He might be saying, I'm hearing voices, things are coming to me in the night, I feel like there's things around me. What would the psychiatrist think? So there's a lot more to helping people than just medication. So I'll be quiet right now and let, if Philip or you, Annie, want to go into any of these areas, you know, a little deeper, we can.
Okay, let's invite Philip first. Let's see. Hello, Philip.
Hi.
Hi. Would you like to comment or ask questions?
Yes. What are some ways to break these curses? Because I think I have all 4 of those curses.
I'm sure you do. Okay, the first thing is you're doing the right thing. You're listening to the NASCA show, and I'm bringing a topic, okay? And you are believing that, I've got these things that are in my life, and they just won't go away. And I learned how to break them in spiritual work. It's one, you recognize that there is a curse. And it is words or actions that have been maybe traveled the generations to you, maybe. Or it could have started with you. It comes through the actions, the words of the abuser, okay? most of the time the abuser does not know that their words, their smells, their actions are producing these evil, wicked curses that will last your lifetime. They don't know that. There are some, if you're in the deep occult, no. So what we would do is I had to know that I've got somebody that has curses. We knew they were word spoken, so we would break them. And we knew the words were either containers of life or death. That curse is a form of death. It's a container. Within that can be all kinds of death. Okay? Death of a future, death of freedom, death of independence, death of who you were supposed to be, whatever you were supposed to be in life, death of whatever. So how we, once we recognize that, okay, we would then, this is how we would do it, would say, if I had a name, like say, fear, I knew fear was both an emotion. It had chemicals attached to it in the biological body and brain. I knew that. We all know that. You get fearful and your heart starts beating faster. Chemicals and things. But I also knew fear, I had to learn it, was a spirit. And I had to find out, what are you afraid of? What was the fear? Typically, it's fear of death. Death of relationships. Death of your whatever. It's death. That you're going to die. So first, you know, I had to study. And I had a wonderful book that it was by some Christian ministers who were gone to Costa Rica called the Robertsons. It's called Strong Man. That's his name. What is his game? I had to learn that there were strong men, spiritual things, behind every curse. And they were the enforcers. You've ever watched some movies and you've seen people being traumatized, there's a person usually there with a whip or doing something, speaking words, traumatizing somebody. So I had to learn that curses were spiritual. They were inflicted. They came through words, came through deeds. And there was a spiritual thing behind it. In fear, through the Bible, we learn there's something called the spirit of fear. He's the strong man. And he would be responsible for ensuring this curse of fear of whatever, fear of bugs, fear of this, fear of that, fear of this, fear of that, would travel the family lines, would be passed on generationally, and would continue the family line. It was sort of like we called him a strong man, and he had purposes in our life spiritually. Unseen to us and unknown. And I had to learn about that world. I had to learn how this strong man would hang on to this curse in some, let's say, Philip's life. How did he continue to strengthen it? I had to study all kinds of torture, how they would implant, do mind programming, how drugs were used, how they would torture you, then give you a break, and then torture you, then give you a break. Okay? How memories got developed, cortisol, how adrenaline was all used to help set in stone in your mind, in the soul, this fear. But I had to understand there was some spiritual thing behind it. It was a spiritual thing that I had to deal with.
So how we would do it is we would sit somebody in a room, or I could do it on the phone. I would speak to the strong man, the spirit of fear. And I would bind to him everything that was under his authority. Every word, every curse, every, you know, behavior that he was continually torturing this person with, using people out in society, using all kinds of events and circumstances. He would use emotional kidnapping by parents, emotional kidnapping by family members, humiliation. He would set up circumstances, you know, re-traumatize you over and over, then let you sit, then re-traumatize you. This is the strong man that's doing this. And I had to know that there was somebody behind that curse, those words, those actions. I had to know that they were running the family. So I would speak. First, I would bind up that strong man, and this is spiritual work, according to Matthew 18 and 18, which would say, whatever I bind up on earth is bound spiritually. I had to take some type of authority, so here I got a person, we'll use Philip, sitting in front of me or on the phone or something, and Philip would give me permission as a spiritual mother to do warfare as a soldier to set this captive free. And so I would go to Philip, never, all he would ever have to say is, please help me. I don't know what to do. And I say, that's no problem, I got it. You just sit there, I'll take care of it. Okay? And I had to watch a lot of movies where people were in prison cells. They cannot get out. And it takes an outside person coming into a city, breaking down the door to get the prisoner out. And I had to see people trapped emotionally in their soul, in their spirit, by these curses, by these words, by this continuation by this strong man. So we would speak to the spirit of fear, this strong man, and I would say, I bind everything under you that you are responsible for in this life. I cancel your assignment. I cast down your words, your plans. You know, I pull down your gates, you know, like I open the prison door, and you will be gone to the pit, something like that. I had to use my words to take authority over this spiritual thing. I had to speak, destroy the words, the curse. Then we would turn around. Now, and I'm just going to use Philip because he's here. Philip, a lot of times, would just kind of pass out, go into a trance. He's gone. He can't help me. But he gave me permission to do the work. And usually when you've been a prisoner of a curse and you start getting some freedom or somebody talking to you about freedom, you typically zone out. You are not there anymore. And I would have to do the work verbally, so never physically. And I would have to see, and I would have to know that Philip had wanted freedom, but he couldn't do it himself. So I would speak to that spirit. I would break the words, the containers that they were in. I would destroy all the works that they had set up. Then I would turn around and speak blessings, strength to Philip. Where there was fear, I speak strength, courage. I speak the spirit of wisdom, and I'm speaking, okay? I knew my words had power. So I'm breathing back into Philip, replacing what was there, and I'm filling him, even though he might be out in a trance, gone. I'm speaking to his life words to replace the words and the things of the spirit of fear. And then if when he woke up, I would have him repeat things to me like, I speak this to my dog. I am courageous. I have no fear. Fear is my enemy. Courageous.
I will face fear. Okay? I would have him say, himself, courageous, fearless things. And then I would say, you hear that strong man of fear? Philip himself is declaring this curse is over. He's taken his authority. He has broken those words down. He is speaking blessings of strength and courage to himself. He's using his own words to his own life. So I had to give strength, and I would get, we'll say, to Philip, whoever's help, to speak it. And then I would, by words, tell that strong man and break those curses off. And then what would happen is they'd disappear. But we're told in the Bible they will return, trying to get reattached, reconnected. And Philip would have to be taught and learned how, when fear started to rise up in him or a situation, he has to speak to that and say, oh, this money ain't going with you again. I rebuke you in the name of something, and I speak no fear to me. You can't have me. So it's a mixture of speaking, being tested, recognizing that this curse was not only words, but it was more powerful than that. And that's how we did it in spirituality, you know, ministry. And I still do that. Mental health counseling, they may do some of that. I don't know. I wasn't taught that. They would try to sort of like hypnotize you sometimes or get you to reimagine the scenario that happened differently so your memories would be altered and changed. And I'll be quiet and see if you have any questions or comments.
Well, I think I'm going to try that. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Danny.
No, go ahead, Philip.
Well, I think I'm going to try that thing where you silence fear if it comes up.
Do what now?
I think I'm going to try the thing where I silence fear when it comes up. And also, I do tend to zone out when people think about giving me my freedom back.
One of the things is, it's always, you have to first be educated that there is another realm out there that's maybe in control of you, unseen. Words, we'll just say words. And they have entities, spirits. They have power over us that we can't understand. And we've tried to break them. Okay. And but they just won't break. And no matter what we try to do. You know, and so I had to learn there was stuff deeper than what mental health counseling had been teaching. And I had to see it for myself with my own eyes. I had to study. I had to study, you know, spiritual entities and things, strong men. But then I had to realize that I needed, well, so I'm going to use you, Philip. I needed you to cooperate and come into agreement with what I'm doing. You may not know how to do it. This one lady I worked with on the phone for 2 to 3 years, major deliverance work. Most nights when I started it, she would pass out. She's on the phone, but she's knocked out. She's not there. It's me and these things. And I had to know what to do, and I had to understand words. I had to understand the power of words. Even if you study voodoo, those doctors and shamans and witches, they use words, okay, to speak the blessings, and they sacrifice a chicken usually with blood, so there's usually blood involved. And, you know, when you have, as an innocent child and you have been sexually abused, blood is spilt from the body, the tearing and the ripping. Fear, it's a biological event that's occurring. It's an emotional event. All your chemicals are turned on. It's a spiritual event. I had to go, okay, I didn't know anything. So I had to learn. And because people go to counseling and they try so hard and they get on medication, but they can't, you know, sometimes they have parents, in-laws, that don't want them to be free. And you would call that sort of, you're keeping me trapped. You're emotionally kidnapping me. You will not let me go. And some of that is because they want to be the boss. They feel like if they lose you, then they are empty. Because without you in their life, they are nothing. And they're under pressure to keep the child, you know, in bondage, we'll say, like human trafficking. There's all kind of trafficking. There's emotional trafficking, sexual trafficking. You know, you're going to stay here and clean the house, okay, raise the kids, and you aren't going to have a life. Okay, you can see that a lot with you. That's the way it is. And that's not the natural thing. So you have to look deep. And I had to learn the power of the other one that's a curse. It's called a soul tie. When the event of abuse happens, a soul tie to your soul, like an umbilical cord, is created. We would literally take our fingers and use them like scissors, and we would cut the soul ties from one person to the other. And a curse or the spirit of fear can be part of the, it's sort of like in that umbilical cord. And if we don't cut that between the two people, okay, here's how it works spiritually. Whatever sexual event you had, whatever spiritual things, bad things, curses in the perpetrator through the soul tie come into your life. They have free access. Free entry. They force their way in, you know, through child abuse. I had to learn that. So I'm not only kicking out of, say, we'll use Philip again. Thank you, Philip. Philip's like, I got to kick out other people that think they have a free right to come into Philip's life, control him, abuse him, and stuff. Okay? And they came in through the soul ties. So we would be breaking soul ties, you know, using our little fingers like scissors. And we'd break and cut and sever these soul ties off from people, from family members, brothers, sisters, places, okay, the past. And then we would break the word curses off. We were busy. And we tried to do a very thorough work with just one individual. And I was working with Christians. Okay, I'm going, oh my gosh. And Christians weren't supposed to have this level of issues. And they weren't supposed to have these levels. You know, they're supposed to go to a mental health counselor because it's just mental health. You know, get some good counseling and good teaching and medication and they'll be fine. This wasn't working. And so I'll stop and let's see if you guys want to make a comment or have a question so far.
Okay, great. Killa?
Any
comments?
I think I'm good, thank you.
Okay, great.
Okay? I have to leave in 10
minutes. Yeah, I know you have to go. So, Philip, you can do this work yourself, okay? When you do it, expect a reaction. Like if you cut a soul tie to a parent or an abuser or something, expect a reaction. It's not pleasant. If you break word curses off of your life, expect a reaction from somebody in the family who it's come through. Okay? And they'll try to reset that. You understand that? So how you deal with that is you kind of just, you put a shield, you say to yourself. When those words come back, they're going to hit a shield, fall down to the ground dead.
when they try to reattach a soul tie through, say, word curses or word abuses or slapping you or making you feel guilty or something, you go, I don't accept that. You may have to speak it out to them, but you can put your hand up like a shield and stop the words and just stand there with your hand up. And I go, what are you doing? I'm protecting myself from the words that are trying to come and stick like an arrow. Okay, that's what word curses do. They kind of try to come like an arrow, sticking you, and spread their poison, okay, and get control of your life. So you can do it yourself. You just have to know reactions will occur, and you'll find out. And it will be evident. And the people who are sort of responsible to other things to get you under control, they will be threatened in their dreams or something. So they will attack verbally and maybe physically to try to reconnect to you. And so you fight. You don't have to push or anything. You just put up a shield. You're holding and an arrow might come and you stop it with your shield. And you know it's coming. They can't help it because they're under control. But you and their attempts would fall down to the ground dead. Okay. But you can't feel guilty because bad things will happen to them because they don't get you back. They don't get you under control the way it was. They might have some issues. And then they might use those issues to threaten you. If you don't do this what I want, I'm going to die. Oh, I'm going to have a heart attack. And you have to hold under that because they want you to bend and come back like you were once the stuff is broken off. They want you back. And they'll do anything to get you back. So you have to be tough in getting free. Does that help you, Philip, before you got to go?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. I know you'll do your job and go to your group or something, right?
N.A.?
N.A.? Okay. Freedom, Philip, and healing. It takes strength, education, knowledge, willingness to fight, but expecting to have resistance, usually from close family members, other things. And if that doesn't work, the enemy of freedom will send in a person somehow that maybe you've been wanting to get to know to try to reconnect you through lies and deceptions. Okay? Freedom is a battle that's hard to fight, but if you want it bad enough, you can do it. All right?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am.
All right. You're welcome, Philip. Okay, Miss Annie. Bye.
Thanks, Phyllis. Bye-bye.
You got any comments, Miss Annie?
I do. I am not a big believer in spirituality, personally.
It's okay.
Uh-huh. I'm an agnostic. I don't claim to know anything. I don't know. I was raised as a Catholic, and I was a fervent Catholic, and I believed. But I no longer believe. However, I had an experience with a person who was into Satanism.
Okay.
And I think he cursed me because he got mad at me, and then I became very, very ill.
Yeah,
and
that happens, yes.
It was real sudden and real severe.
Mm-hmm.
And it lasted for years. And I thought it was him because I would have nightmares and he would be in there. And I thought, he's doing this somehow.
You had it right. You had it right.
Yeah. But I don't really believe, but I do, you know?
It's hard to believe it. It really is. It's an unseen thing. And until you start studying religion all around the world, spirituality, in every age, every culture, you know, different ones, all kinds, you know, and you start studying its relationship to humanity, and you go back, you will learn it has been a part of our lives. It's a part even now of, like in voodoo and a lot of what they would call even American Indians and a lot of religions, and even in, like you said, the Catholic Church, there are curses. I mean, you know, it's just bad stuff. And but a lot of people, when you get into, we'll say, Western Protestant Christianity, they don't really talk about it. I didn't learn it in mental health counseling. You don't really even study in mental health counseling in your classes. The fear, how it affects you. You don't study the chemicals that goes off in the body. You don't study how rejection of a mother or a father when they do this, what it causes. You don't study the loss of an innocence. There's really no classes in child abuse. There's child development. Okay? And the brokenness, having multiple personalities, the master's level person does not get that. And not all the PhDs get it. They can give tests, the Minnesota Multiple Personality Imager. They can give you a test, but that doesn't mean they know how to deal with multiple personalities. And it's on the scale of post-traumatic stress disorder, like from 0 to 10. And most people don't want to have the 10. You've got multiple personalities, which they now call dissociative identity disorder, because that's, in society, that is a very serious mental illness. But you could have post-traumatic stress. They see that in soldiers, you know. You can have some trauma-related stress, but it's not multiple personalities. And if you start having them, they just drug you up and kind of keep you quiet. But I had to go from not knowing anything to deep levels of understanding about things that were not taught. I had to read so many books and true stuff about psychiatric patients, mental illness, Satanism, witchcraft, spiritual stuff, you know, human trafficking, child abuse, you know. And then, of course, I had a lot of volunteer experience with human trafficking, child abuse, you know, adult survivors. And work with, you know, gangs and prostitutes and things. And very interesting, you know. And I was never shocked. I was more like, wow, I didn't know that. You know, I knew I was being led of the Lord, as you would say, and taught. But yet he wasn't going to waste my mental health counseling, which I had studied, you know, had a license. And I was going to use that because I was stepping into the hospital world. I volunteered and worked for months in emergency rooms, spent the night in a hospital as a chaplain, prayed with people, helped people die. So I had a chaplaincy and prayed as part of evangelism groups into dark areas of the city. All kinds of things. And what happened was I had to be comfortable. I had to learn to look. I had to learn to understand child abuse from many different perspectives, not only the mental health kind, but I had to learn, you know, about child development. And I had to learn about word curses. And it took years and years and, you know, reading and studying and quietness, you know, and that kind of thing. So have you got any comments, Miss Annie? Are you got a topic you want me to talk about?
Well, we have another 35 minutes in the show, and we don't have any callers. Let me give the phone number, and then we'll pick a new topic if you like. Okay, the phone number, if you'd like to call in and be a part of the show and ask questions, make comments, the phone number is 646-595-2118. I'll repeat that, 646-595-2118. And I'll answer the phone and let you into the show. I'm Annie. Not scary at all. Please call in. Okay, so would you like to come up with a new idea to talk about?
Okay. In mental health counseling, the counselors understand the power of memory, thoughts, that kind of thing. They don't really know how to break them, okay? And I had to learn that. But what happens in child abuse, okay, by telling your story, it begins breaking some of the curses of silence, of fear. So what NASCA does by having people to tell their story, it will say sort of step one of many steps to helping somebody cover, be healed by doing that. So that's a good thing, that they tell their story to the best that they can. But if they tell their story and it's pretty graphic, people that do listen, they need to have a disclaimer that they could get triggered, because some people need to tell the very graphic side of it, and it can bring back memories to other people. But for the person telling their story, speaking out, breaking that silence, it is a positive enemy of healing. Would like to use it to torture, abuse, re-traumatize the listeners. So even on some of my videos where I'm going to talk about some deep stuff, to read some stories of true people, I put a disclaimer out there about the triggering. Because even those, and so when somebody is thinking about, you know, telling their story, they must remember that listeners can be traumatized. Not that they mean to do that to them, but in one person's search for healing and freedom, it can be a torture and a re-abusing of the many others. So people have to learn how to tell their story, especially on NASCA radio, in a way that it's not traumatizing. If they want to get real graphic, probably not on the NASCA radio show would be appropriate. Maybe on a phone conversation privately, to one of the NASCA ambassadors or volunteers. But when they get into a lot of the anger issues and, of course, the cursing and the details of it, the listeners, even years down the road, the person who's trying to be healed by telling their story actually becomes a weapon of re-abusing the other people. Not that they mean to, and not everybody will, but they will disassociate because they don't want to hear the details. I had to learn how to, because I had not had that, to let them talk to me. Most of them would talk. Some would write me letters in great detail. I had to read them, you know. And so telling your story is important, but they must be careful that it's not used as a tool of re-abuse, torture, and torment of other ones who have been abused. Does that make sense to you, Annie?
It does. And, you know, Deborah, I wrote a book about abuse. It wasn't a memoir. It was a novel about a person who gets abused. And I was very careful that nothing be graphic, only suggested, because I didn't want anybody to be reading it the wrong way.
Right. Now, if you have, I read this one book. It's called Suffer the Child. It was written by a psychiatric nurse, and it was a book that a lot of psychiatric social workers use. It's about people coming out of Satanism, witchcraft, horrible child abuse, and would tell their stories in the hospital. So it was used to train counselors. Okay? Another book I read called Michelle Remembers, that was basically just a true story. A girl found a doctor. She'd go into a trance and tell these horrible stories. Now, most people that are trying to get healed would not read that. So one of the things that people have to be taught, how do you tell your story, either in a book, on the NASCAR radio show, in front of people, knowing that there are abused people in the audience reading the book? You don't want to be used to re-traumatize them, okay? And not know that. So there, people have to be taught, how do you tell your story that not only brings hope and healing to the listeners or the readers, but you also can get some healing from telling. But typically that's why when you go to a therapist or a pastor, you're the only one in there. You can be as graphic as you want to be, and we're tough. It isn't going, unless you've been abused yourself, it isn't going to traumatize us. Okay? We will have our shields on, and we will absorb, when if we're strong enough, we will take the words, absorb them, dissolve them, because our, say, essence, our nature, is so full of love and healing that that stuff cannot survive when we hear it. But you're free of it. So it's like, you're giving me your bad stuff, I'm taking it willingly. And I'm going to destroy it within myself. But people who are listeners will say of the NASCAR blog talk, a lot of them are so vulnerable that they absorb it and hear it, you know, the words, the story, and they get re-traumatized themselves. It brings up, and that's not good. So another area that loss of innocence is real important as a child, because they are still in mentally, the puberty has not happened yet, and they don't even understand much of nothing. And that all gets destroyed and distorted in child abuse. And whether it's sexual or just physical abuse and stuff like that, or rejection. And when a child is getting abused, they will interpret it, there's something wrong with me. I'm the wrong sex, I didn't do right, they don't want me. There comes that rejection. They try to bond, there's no bonding. And then what happens, the self becomes, maybe if I become somebody else, you know, they'll love me, they'll accept me. That kind of thing. So you have a mess. Now, the parents are usually messed up themselves. But if you look at it from a different perspective, parents who are messed up, do this, or neighbors, they are grooming the child for future purposes. Human trafficking, brothels, adult porn stars, sex objects, okay, the adult industry, gangs, street prostitutes, high-end call girls or boys, and those that cannot deal with it, you know, a lot of them go on drugs to deal with it, And if they cannot survive, they end up, you know, if you ever work with a lot of, I work with some in New York City boys, they are very proud of themselves when they'll do what they call survival sex. They will have sex with a young man to find a place to live and sleep for one night. And in their mind and their thinking, they are taking care of themselves and their system. Because they have a place to sleep. And this is what they were taught early on. If you want to stay here and live in this house, this is what you're going to put up with. A lot of your people in the gangs, that's what they got their training for, the abuse, the selling of the drugs, the prostitution, being the pimps, being the all from mama at home, and that's normal. And so a lot of people don't realize the importance of parenting, whether it's an auntie, a grandmother, you know, a cousin to the child, and how important it is. And culture plays a role, tradition, religion, and how you treat the child, how you raise the child up. All of that is involved. Throw in, as I talked with Philip, curses from the parents that have traveled the family line. You always hear, well, that's what we've always done. That's how it's done in our world. That's what our ancestors have done. That's what we do. We sell our daughters to a businessman for money. Well, how does the girl get there? Parents teach them, you know, early on that sell yourself, you know, that they've abused them. And the parents a lot of times don't know that they are doing this purposely, you know, grooming them. Because they have their own issues. But they're getting the child ready for the bigger world out there to be a, provide a service, be split, you know, broken, so they don't have a blessed life. They become a curse to themselves. And then they go out, and if they get married and have children, they carry on with that curse to their children. And they're not a blessing out there in society. Do you want to make any comments, Annie?
I'll just say that I think that my father, who was my abuser, was probably abused by his father or mother or somebody, I don't know who. But because his brothers were also sexual abusers. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, it seems like an odd coincidence unless they were actually abused too.
Until you start looking. Mm-hmm. Now, they're not going to talk about it because it is humiliating. It is a shameful act. Sometimes it runs, that's the culture that we do. And that's just the way it is, and we don't talk about it. So, you know, that's what we do. But they don't realize because nobody, even if they are, let's say, Christian or religious, it's not talked about. In some religions, it's okay to sell your daughter because you don't have enough food, enough money, to an older man. And they will, you know, the older men, when I got into spiritual work, I had to study. It's called lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. It's how a man looks at a body, male or female, and starts lusting and desiring to touch, to taste, and to have that peaceful event. Or it's, I need to control something, because I'm out of control. A lot of different things. And when they slip into the abuse, Annie, they're probably going into a multiple personality identity of an abuser, okay, sort of an animalistic thing. And then they come out of it, and they may not have any memory that they even did that. because it was another part of themselves. And then if they had been abused, they learn, I'm so angry. The only way I know is hurt something else, and I'll feel better. And they got something inside of them, pushing them, driving them to ruin, destroy an pure, innocent child. Okay? Something's egging them on. And a lot of times, you know, they don't want to talk about it. And they don't understand it either. Okay? And, you know, it's such a shameful and humiliating thing. Like in Joyce Meyer's family, her mother knew, but she's so embarrassed she doesn't stop it. Because the man is usually very powerful, okay, and gives a look like, and the woman will choose, I prefer to have a house and money from you. I will sacrifice my child, okay, and I will give them up to this so that I can have a place to live and money. So a lot of moms sacrifice their children to their husbands or whatever. In some religions, if you even do a sort of disrespectful thing, there's honor killings to the females, not to the males, but to the females. They'll kill you. In some religions, in Islam, the imams can approve of an older man marrying, you know, he'll be sold a 10-year-old child, and he'll give the mother and the family some money because they really don't do abortions in that religion, but they don't have enough money for all the kids, so they'll sell a daughter. And the imam will say, you know, you cannot come, you know, there's no puberty, but you can come in the backside until she's, you know. If you watch the great movie called The Color Purple that Whoopi Goldberg was in, and years ago, and they've just made a remake of it, how one lady was sort of given, sold to a man to take care of his kids and clean the house, but she was never to be loved, and so that happens all the time too. And if he wants sex, you're going to lay down on the bed and give him what he wants. And that was it's accepted in every race, every religion, every culture. The child really is seen as just an object to be used, sold, bartered with, however you want. And, of course, they, you know, as you know, they keep it quiet and behind the closed doors and that kind of thing. And but then when I served as a child advocate for the judge in family court, the people who make the laws, which are your representatives of your state, their philosophy is they believe the child really belongs with the family they were born into. So even though if a mother or father goes to jail for child abuse, they'll give the child to grandma, auntie, and they're still around that same environment. So the child really has no chance of freedom, a lot of healing, because they're still in the environment. And the parent's gone to prison or something like that. So, any comments? We're about 8:12 that you want to make about these curses and the different things we've talked about so far, storytelling?
Storytelling. I will comment that storytelling, I think, is what helped me heal. Because when I first started admitting that I was a victim of incest, I couldn't talk to people. I was terrified. I had no friends. I was afraid of the phone. Serious social anxiety. And I started going to face-to-face meetings with other survivors. And okay. At those meetings, we would all tell our stories. And that's what really got me healing, was listening to other people's stories and realizing it wasn't me. It wasn't my fault. This happened to other people, too. And I would get really angry at their abusers, and that would let me be angry at my father because it was the same. And I would just recommend to anybody who's working on healing to do face-to-face survivor meetings. They also have, they've got like Zoom survivor meetings and telephone. All kinds. Yeah. So, I would recommend that. Sharing your story is a very, very healing activity.
And what's happened is that has really come along since peer-to-peer has happened, because people would, the mental health counseling world, you had, 50 minutes, and you wouldn't see them for 2 weeks, and it was just you and the therapist, and they would just give you the, okay, move on, you know. And you never really got to tell your full story and have and talk to other people, and therapists really ain't going to hug you and tell you if they've been abused. A lot of them have been abused themselves, and they aren't even healed. And so those survivor support groups are real important. And like you said, it starts the path. It breaks that silence that begins a lot of the healing, and that's good. And that was one thing when I started doing ministry with people, is I already had to know that people had been abused. Now I'm dealing with adults and teenagers and children. You didn't need to tell me your deep stories, okay? And I didn't, because my job was, it's like when you go to the emergency room, you got a gunshot. I'm not there to ask you who shot you, what was the circumstances. You know, the police can do that. But as the emergency room doctor and chaplain, my job was to get the bullet out, get you taken care of, okay, immediate stuff. And a lot of people I work with, I maybe had one chance because they were going to die in a meeting, or they were going to be, you know, life was short. So I had to take care of business. And I had to know they were hurting, broken people, had lived a life of drugs, alcohol, prostitution, gangs, all kinds of abuse. And they had started right out of infancy. And I had to know that so that I could do quick ministry. And I knew what was there. We didn't have time, you know, years and years and years and years to talk about this stuff. I had to do spiritual work and powerful stuff. Maybe I had one chance to do something. Sometimes I had 2 or 3 years, like with Miss Candor. And it was slow, slogging through a lot of this stuff. And she couldn't tell me a lot of it herself. Then I had other people would write me stories. I had this one called Out of Darkness. I got to get it. It's on the website in written form. She tells her story very graphically. It's not pretty. And but she wrote it out, and then I'll read it out and get it up. And then I had other people tell me horrible stuff. Okay, I mean, it's not pretty. And I had to be able to hear it. And then they'd say, do you still love me? Can I trust you with this stuff? Are you going to be frightened? You're going to call the cops on me? You're going to turn me in, you know? Blah, 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 blah. So I had a unique position. And storytelling, they want to talk. But they have to know I can, like in your support group, I need to feel I can trust you with this intimate stuff. With my tears, with my hate, with my fears, and I can trust you that you aren't going to violate me, turn me in, you know, call the police, call my parents, you know, make life more miserable. You're still going to be my friend. So they had to trust you. And those support groups you went to are exactly what that shows. I can listen to you, and you can listen to me, and we still love each other. And that's, you know, I'm glad those support groups started coming up, because years ago, Annie, they didn't have those for people. You know, about all that mental health counselor had was you had a grief support and you had the mental health counselor. But a lot of the mental health counselors wanted you to go and sue your parents for child abuse and, you know, get some legal action against them. And that had to slowly go away because, you know, for many different reasons. But I'm glad you were able to tell your story, and that's how you got on your road to healing.
And having people come on this radio show and tell their stories is how we help the community heal, because the community can be out there silent, you know, anonymous, and they hear these stories and they can see that they're not the only one. That was a big part of healing, to know that I wasn't the only one.
And for some people, that is vital. For other people, just to tell their story to me, it was, I need to get this off my chest to somebody else. Then they would tell me their story, because I would always spiritually adopt them, made those new soul ties, new umbilical cords, to them. And love was flowing, okay? And they wanted to tell me their story to say, would I still love them and want them to be my child, knowing that I know what happened to them. So I would get stories. So mine was a mother to a child, because I knew that their anchor and their spot of healing had to be anchored to a mama. And we were going back to infancy before the abuse occurred, maybe like right out of the womb, and we're going to start there with just loving them with the words. And that part of them that was a child like that would get the love that it needed, and it would slowly filter in through all their multiple personalities, their fear, and they would start telling me that my prayers for them was causing earthquakes in their world. So our prayers are important. What we just talk about to people, the stories we listen to, how we as a listener, it's real important also. I've seen people, you know, want to tell their story, and then the listener wants to sort of say, oh, well, my story is better than yours, and kind of ruin the whole thing. So as people who need healing, they need training and education. How do you tell your story in a group that is healing to you, but also healing for them without, you know, triggering them? And when you're a listener, you have to be able to listen to that trauma, okay, and sort of disassociate from it or something. But some people want to go, oh, well, my story is worse than yours. It takes teaching of these people. So I hope there's always some, you know, good leaders in these groups that, and it's interesting, different group leaders in this one support group for grief, we were not allowed to hug each other. Even if someone started crying, we were not to get up and love on them or anything. We were to just let them, you know, we stayed. That was the social workers' philosophy on the grief. So a lot of the support leaders have different philosophies on how to run the groups, how you can tell your story, how long you can tell it. So at least you had a good beginning there, Annie. And I have about 8:23, so we got 7 minutes if you want to go ahead and you know, close this out with, you know, a mock something that you need to say and play the music.
Okay.
And
first, I'll say I apologize if the chihuahua making noise in the background disrupted anybody. She doesn't like it when I'm on the phone. She thinks I should be playing with her. So anyway, thank you for being here tonight. This has been SCAN Radio Show number 3433. And all of our radio shows are archived on the NASCA website. And so you can go to the website and listen to these shows. And there's 3,000 of them, because this is 3,433. So there's plenty of listening to be done. The website is NASCA.org, and that's NASCA.org. NASCA stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And let's see, what else shall I say? We have a couple of minutes left. We're always looking for people to come on the radio show and tell their stories. That's what we do on Wednesdays, is we have just regular, ordinary people come on and tell about what happened to them and how they healed from it and where they are today. It's very inspirational and wonderful. And if you feel like maybe that's something you can do, please go on to the NASCA website, and there's emails to click on, you know, to communicate that. And it's such a healing activity to share your story, and it's so healing for the people who listen to your story. So I hope that you will consider doing it. And I can't think of anything else to say, so I'm going to put on the going away music and say thanks so much for listening tonight. I'm Annie Margis. I've been one of your co-hosts, and Pastor Deborah Slay has been your other co-host tonight. And here comes the music.
Hello, this is Pastor Deborah again, and I want to thank you for listening to the Blog Talk Radio Show. of NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, with me, Pastor Deborah, and talking about the curses of abuse. Thank you for being a disciple, a student, a listener, and learning more about your healing that needs to happen. NASCA has been here for many, many years and will continue to be so. I want you to come back each week, hopefully, and listen to other people tell their stories and learn. Also, do lots of research, read books. Also, if you are inclined to be more spiritual, you can check that out and discover more about yourself than you ever knew existed. I'm here to do ministry. I have a website called www.agapeloveishere.org. I'm on YouTube, the Hidden Kingdoms channel, with also a YouTube Shorts channel under Pastor Deborah. I have a podcast show where I talk a lot about Agape Love, the voice in the darkness. It's on YouTube Podcast on the Hidden Kingdoms and on YouTube Music. Also, I'm on LinkedIn, and I usually post a lot of these videos, and I can Skype with you if you email me. You can email me at PastorDeborah@agapeloveishere.org. I don't mind Skyping with you, doing video chats, maybe soon, when I'm feeling a little better, doing a video conference with you. I can do prayers right over Skype, which I've done, right on emails. Right on the phone. So I'm Pastor Deborah, and I'll see you again in maybe a week or two with more about the curses of abuse from Pastor Deborah of Agape Love Ministries, a global spiritual teaching ministry. I work with people like you and all your many parts and programs. So I'll see you next time on another NASCA Blog Talk Radio Show. But don't forget to check out the Hidden Kingdoms channel. You'll see many teachings on many topics there with me. All right, I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.